Okay, anyways. So it is good to see everyone, both people who I know from the past, from this year, last year, people who are coming next year. So this past year, we were learning Menachot and Yeshiva, and one of the topics that I didn't get to do too extensively, though I touched on it in my shiur a bit, though I think the people in my shiur at some point asked me to do this, and we never got around to it. Yeah, I think you. Yeah, I see Ganapolsky is nodding. You definitely asked me about it, and that is the question of women and the mitzvah of tzitzit. The reason I was thinking about this recently was that last week I got an email from someone I know from Toronto/Modian. Who was listening to one of our Agadata Shiurim, where we explored the Agadic statements about the centrality of the mitzvah of tzitzit, that it is equivalent to all the mitzvot, or that it's shkula keneged kol mitzvot. She asked me, well, the obvious question is, if in fact tzitzit is so central, So then, what exactly justifies the fact that women are exempt from this mitzvah, right? Meaning it's one thing to say that there are localized exemptions from mitzvot for all types of people. Women are exempt from, honestly, not that many mitzvot. There aren't that many mitzvot aseishas mangrama, and even of them, a good third of them, the Gemara outlines as exceptions to the rule where they are obligated, like Kiddush and Matzah. There are mitzvot which are only applicable to Kohanim. There are mitzvot that are only applicable to the king, etc. But it is a little bit odd to have a mitzvah which the Gemara describes as equivalent to all the other mitzvot and have women exempt from it. So what I want to do is try to understand conceptually and halachically. And I gave you a lot of sources, and hopefully we'll move through them quickly. But try to understand this conceptually and practically of how exactly the this issue plays out in the sugyot. I took the sources, honestly, from an excellent treatment, as I gave you here at the top, from a new website, Diracheha, which is written by some friends of ours who live here in Efrat. The sources are excellently organized, so I figured I'd give it to you this way. The analysis that I will share is my own, so they're not responsible for any the good, yes, but if I disagree at different points and you like their analysis or whatever the case may be, that's not, don't blame them. But the sources are taken from them. It was easily organized to put it together. So let's go through the sources. So the first source is simply the Psukim, which you should know. I really hope you know. We say this every day. What we know is the third parak of Kriyat Shema. So the centrality of tzitzit is already found in the Psukim, where God commands us to put this tzitzit on the corners of our clothes, and then put tchelet on the corner of the tzitzit, and that they will enable us to remember all of the mitzvot and not stray after our eyes and our heart, and remind us to do all the mitzvot. So, right, the fact that the Gemara outlines this as shkula keneged kol mitzvot, you sort of see where it comes from, right? If you look at 3, right, the Gemara in Menachot Mem Gimel Amud Bet, which was the Agadata, which was at least the central line of the Agadata that I analyzed in that year, Uritemotos, Chartemet Kol Mitzvot Adonai, Shkula Mitzvah Zo, Keneged Kol Mitzvot Kulan. this mitzvah is equivalent to all of the mitzvot. Now we can talk about, and we did in that Agadat Hashir, what does it mean that it's equivalent? Does it actually mean it's equivalent? Does it mean that it, since it's meant to remind you of all the other mitzvot, in a certain sense, it is parallel to, or it motivates you to the other mitzvot? We can argue about the exact contours of this Agadic statement, but clearly tzitzit is outlined as a central mitzvah. Nevertheless, it is not obligatory. It's not what we call a mitzvah chiyuvit. It is what we call a mitzvah kiyumit, because you're not technically obligated to wear a four-cornered garment. If you wear a four-cornered garment, so then you have to wear tzitzit on it. But because of the centrality of tzitzit, the Gemara outlines a principle, which Shulchan Aruch summarizes here in number 4, which is, v'im ein adam lovesh talit bat arba kanfot. If you don't wear a talit which has four corners, meaning you don't have a garment with four corners, ein chayav b'tzitzit. You don't have to wear tzitzit. V'tov v'nachon liot kol adam zahir lovesh talit katan kol hayom kidei shiyizkor mitzvah b'chol rega. Nevertheless, it's good for you to wear a talit katan, meaning to actively wear a four-cornered garment so that you can fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzit, so that you can remember the mitzvot at every moment. And this makes sense, because it's not just that tzitzit is an important mitzvah, but since the Torah itself, right, in general we have this complex topic of darshin and time of ta'am meha mitzvot, do we look for rationales in the mitzvot or not? But as the Rishonim note, one of the times that we take the ta'am ha-mitzvah much more centrally is where the Torah itself outlines the rationale for the mitzvah.
The lesson is ha-mitzvah, the mitzvah, not the mitzvahs. So what mitzvahs are referring to?
Right, so presumably it would be the totality of mitzvot. It would be very strange to say that you wear tzitzit to remind yourself of the mitzvah of tzitzit. It could be that's what Shulchan Aruch means. Right, a simple understanding of the psukim would be that it's to remind yourself of other mitzvot, so it could be sort of the system of mitzvot. That's my intuitive read of the language, even if it's not 100% miduyak, but I would guess, based on, the psukim, that would be the case. Now, for guys who are in my shir, this was for everybody when Rav Ginsburg was gone. We noted that the Gemara takes this quite seriously, and assumes, the Gemara has this very odd sugya, but it says that even though it's a mitzvah kiyumit, if you don't wear tzitzit, and the Rishonim and the Achronim argue, what does that mean? Meaning, if you don't wear tzitzit, or if you normally wear a four-cornered garment and choose not to wear a four-cornered garment, in which case you exempt yourself from what you should be chayav in, or if you choose not to go out of your way and put on a four-cornered garment, which is more extreme, so you don't get punished unless God is angry, and if God is angry, so then he'll punish you. Be'idan ritcha, when God is angry, he punishes you even for mitzvot that are not obligatory, and that is a fascinating, different theological and halachic sugya. But again, we can't get wrapped up on it in it now. But suffice it to say that the question is clear, which is, if this mitzvah is so central, so then how do we explain, and what exactly is the nature of this exemption of women from the mitzvah of tzitzit? So the first thing to note is that it's not categorical. Meaning, it's not a given in Chazal that in fact women are exempt from tzitzit. It is the way we paskin, but it is not the only position that appears in Chazal, and therefore there is no, as we'll see, it's going to be quite problematic. We're going to see a position in, well, we'll talk about where we see it, but there is a position that women are fundamentally removed from the mitzvah of tzitzit and cannot perform it even if they want to, because it is defined as a man's mitzvah. This is a very problematic position conceptually, for a host of reasons, but for my purposes, the central reason that is problematic is that even within Chazal, it was not a given that women were exempt from tzitzit. The fact that they're exempt from tzitzit is a function of another rule, which tzitzit happens to be one example of, namely the rule of mitzvot aseh shazman grama, time-bound positive commandments from which women are exempt. But there is nothing, at least in the pshat of Chazal, that tells us that tzitzit is uniquely a man's mitzvah. It's just not a woman's mitzvah in the same way, at least in the simple understanding of Chazal, that any other time-bound mitzvah is. And it's even more evident that this is not a fundamental exclusion from the fact, as I said, that Chazal themselves have a machloket about this. So the first, if you want to look, we can look at it in the Gemara, but before we look at it in the Gemara, let's look at it in the Sifrei in number 5. So the Sifrei is, let's see if the guys in my shiur remember what the Sifrei is. Daniel disappeared.
Is it a drush of this psukim?
Correct, but from which tufa? From which time period, Yosef?
Tanayic.
Very good. Right? This is one of the major collections of Midrash Halacha, right, of Halachic Midrash, Halachic exegesis, but this is a particularly important collection because it is Tanaitic, meaning it is contemporaneous with the Mishnah and the Tosefta. So we're talking here about first layer, Torah Shebal Peh. So the Sifrei records the following discussion. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe Lemor, Daber el Bnei Yisrael v'amar talayim vasulem tzitzit, Af Hanashim B'mashma. The first position in Chazal says that speak to the Jewish people. This includes even women. Now, in general, B'nai Yisrael, and there is no predictive rule for this that I can possibly muster. Sometimes Chazal tell you that B'nai Yisrael comes to tell you B'nai Yisrael v'lo B'not Yisrael, the sons and not the daughters of Israel, i.e. males and not females. And other times Chazal say, B'nai Yisrael means Jew, and therefore it means women as well. And when they're going to say one, and when they're going to say the other, is, as I don't think there is any predictive rule that I can provide. But the first position here in the Sifrei writes that women are included in the mitzvah of tzitzit. Rabbi Shimon poter anashim min hatzitzit. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, exempts women. Mipi, which is probably similar to what we would say, is mipnei shemitzvat aseh shazman grama nashim pturot, because it's a time-bound mitzvah and women are exempt. Shezaha klal omer Rabbi Shimon kol mitzvat aseh shazman grama noheged ba nashim ve'ena noheged bin nashim. All time-bound positive commandments apply to men and not women. B'ksherim v'lo b'psulim, which we don't have to get into. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava omer b'yichud batlu chachamim et aradid shel isha min atzitzit v'lo chivu b'talid ela b'bnei shebamim shebala mitkaseh ba. And then Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava says the chachamim explicitly exempted a woman's veil from tzitzit, and they only obligated because sometimes her husband wears it. So I want to analyze this Sifrei with you. Josh raised his hand. Yeah, go.
Yeah, okay, so maybe you should also ask me a question. If it's Shkulak, can I give a call on this one? Why is it only Mitzvah Kiyom Mix? Why isn't it Kiyom Mix? Because also, if you're going to say it's just a Kiyom, then really what's the problem with women not wearing it? It's not important that you have to wear it.
Okay, so there are two different questions, right? So the first question, right, how could it be a mitzvah kiyumit and yet be shkula keneged kol mitzvot, is a very good question, right? Meaning, it's very odd. You would think that a mitzvah which is equivalent to all the mitzvot would be obligatory. Now again, shkula keneged kol mitzvot, and I think this is probably the more compelling read in Chazal, but that goes back to that Gemara in Menachot Mam Gimel Medbet, probably doesn't mean equivalent to as much as it conceptually partakes of all the mitzvot because it motivates you to all mitzvot. And there, at least philosophically, one can I think, hear an argument to say, look, it reminds you of all the mitzvot, so obviously it's worth taking advantage of, but if you don't take advantage of it, so that, you know, it's not necessarily something we can force upon you. It's foolhardy and maybe religiously problematic, but, you know, you chose not to avail yourself of the advantage that that this reminder that this mitzvah provides. I agree that if you really took shkula keneged kol mitzvot to mean equivalent to, it is a very odd conceptualization. And that is one of the reasons that I think I would be motivated to read this less expansively in that sense. And if you look at the Agarata that line comes up in, you'll see that some of the other agadic statements there do seem to focus on, right, not its inherent weight, but what it represents, like it is the symbol of a servant or a slave, right? Meaning, it is what puts you into the covenant, which thereby obligates you into everything else. And I tend to think that it's going in the same direction, but I can't prove it. Now, the second point we'll get to, right? The question of whether they can take advantage of it if they want to, and why that would make sense, we'll come back to. I saw another hand raised. Who raised their hand? Someone else did? You can just talk.
So where in the Psukim do we see that it's time-bound?
Ah, good. So this, good. Let's talk about the Sifrei for a moment. Because you're right, we don't. So let's be very careful here in the Sifrei. Rabbi Shimon holds two rules, right? His ruling comprises two assumptions, right? What are Rabbi Shimon's assumptions? Very good, right? One is that tzitzit are time bound, and the second is that tzitzit, that women are exempt from time bound mitzvot. The Tanakhama and the Sifrei, which of those two assumptions does he reject? Right, he can reject either. Right, he can accept the principle that women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot, but argue that tzitzit are not time-bound, or he can argue that tzitzit are time-bound, but women are obligated in time-bound mitzvot. If I just had the Sifrei, which one would I guess?
Couldn't say this is just an exception to the time-bound rule because of a specific...
Right, theoretically you could have a third model, right? You have... Ellie's correct. There are three possible assumptions of Tanakhama. Either women are obligated in time-bound mitzvot, tzitzit is not a time-bound mitzvah, or this is one of these exceptions, like Shabbos, like Kiddush, maybe because of, you know, the reasons that we said before, which is if tzitzit is shkula keneged kol mitzvot, maybe that would deserve to be exceptional. Could be. Right, or he has a Riboy of Bnei Yisrael. Now, like I said, the Riboy of Bnei Yisrael is very hard to be predictive. So it could be that he has a Riboy. So either he had a Mesorah for that Riboy, or he had a conceptual reason for adopting that particular read. But you're right, right? It could be that the Tanakhama thinks that it's both time-bound and women are generally exempt from time-bound mitzvot, but this is a ribui motivated by the drasha of Bnei Israel. Why he reads this one as including women when other ones exclude women, I don't know. Again, it could be Misora, it could be other conceptual factors that are involved. Which of those three does he mean? I don't know. Right, you could definitely read it the way Ellie's reading it. Well, let's talk about what benefits there are. The benefit to Ellie's read that the Tanakam agrees that A, tzitzit are time-bound, and B, women are generally exempt from time-bound mitzvot, but they think that this is an exception, is that the Sifrei presents it as Daber al Bnei Yisrael, af anashim b'mashma, which the way Eli is reading it is as a ribui. Now, the Sifrei doesn't actually say that it's a ribui, right? You could just say af anashim b'mashma as, right? You could read it as, you would have thought they're exempt, but now there's a ribui. You could also read it as af anashim b'mashma, right? Women are included, right? Just as a statement of fact. So it's not 100% how you read it. From the first line in the Sifrei, I think Eli's read could be correct. Rabbi Shimon's, the Sifrei's presentation of Rabbi Shimon makes it a bit harder. Right? Because if the Tanakama's position was that women should be exempt, but there's a ribui, so then Rabbi Shimon's critique should be why he doesn't accept the drasha rather than a presentation of the rule. Right? So if you read the first line of the Sifrei in a vacuum, Eli's read, I think, is the most compelling, which is that the Tanakhama may agree that tzitzit are time-bound and that women are exempt from time-bound positive commandments, but this is an exception. The fact that the Sifrei doesn't offer a rejection of the drasha for Rabbi Shimon, but rather presents the rule, implies that at least Rabbi Shimon understood his critique as being a function of the general rule, which would lead me to believe that at least as Rabbi Shimon understood the machloket between himself and the Tanakhama, he understood this as either an argument about whether women are obligated in time-bound commandments, which would be quite mechudash considering it seems to be a consensus position, at least as we have it in the Gemara. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it was a consensus position in at all periods in Chazal. Literarily, I find it a hard read to say that the Sifrei is arguing that tzitzit is not time-bound according to the Tanakhama because the Sifrei doesn't bring it up. So I think, literarily speaking, in the Sifrei, all three of them are live, right? All three options are live. Each have their weaknesses and each have their strengths. I don't think I could conclusively prove from the Sifrei what motivates the machlokes and the position of the Tanakhama. That's my feeling. I can see all three conceptual possibilities. I can't prove it one way or the other. I will note, however, that from the Sifrei, it does seem to be that according to all positions, a woman's exemption from tzitzit is only that, meaning an exemption and not a fundamental exclusion from the mitzvah. Why do I say that? Right? What hints do you have in the Sifrei that this is not a fundamental exclusion from the mitzvah, it's just an exemption? So, right, so first of all, right, so I think we have three proofs here. One is that Rabbi Shimon presents it as a function of a universal rule, having nothing to do with tzitzit. That's point one. Point two is that the Tanakhama disputes it, right, which means that it's not even agreed upon. Now give me a third proof that the Sifrei doesn't believe that women are fundamentally excluded from the mitzvah, they're only exempt. An even stronger proof. Three people are raising your hand. Just answer.
It says poter, not poster.
So good. One is that it used the language poter. Now give me an even stronger proof. Someone's chatting me, yeah? Ellie can hear fine. Great. Give me an even stronger proof. Can people hear me? Ellie, I saw it. Can you hear me fine? Okay, Adam can hear also. And Layman got kicked out again. So I think the strongest proof, I mean, those are pretty strong proofs, but there's one more, which is staring you in the face, which is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Right? Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava assumes, like Rabbi Shimon, that women are exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzit, and yet he holds that there were certain clothing that women wore that Chazal told you to put tzitzit on because their husbands sometimes put on the beged, which means that, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, even if you hold that women are exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzit, there are certain begadim that if they're used by every member of the family, you'll have to put tzitzit on it, which means memela, women will be wearing tzitzit. Right? So that means that not only was it not a consensus position in Chazal that women were exempt from tzitzit, even within the position that women are not obligated in tzitzit, you have Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava telling you that women are not excluded to the point that there were certain women's begadim that you had to put tzitzit on, admittedly for an ancillary reason. But that means that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava felt that even if you hold that women are not obligated, they can wear tzitzit. Right? There's no other way of reading Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. This is a... Say that again? I didn't say there was a kiyum. Correct. Meaning it's not, they're not usser. Correct. That doesn't mean there's a kiyum. We haven't gotten to kiyum yet. It means it's not usser.
That was like, that's a possibility that women are usser to wear.
Yes, that's why I'm setting this up for you. But I want you to see that in Chazal, that is a very hard read. We haven't gotten yet to whether there's a kiyum or not. But it's very hard to read that they would be usher to wear it, because Yehuda ben Bava says that they were not obligated, and yet there were certain begadim that women normally wore that you would put tzitzit on. It's an open question whether they get schar for it. 100%. Ellie's correct. We don't know yet from this stage in the Gemara whether they would get schar or not. Okay.
Also, they used the language chiyuv. They said that it sounds like it's not just that, you
know? Oh, no, for sure. They obligated this beged in tzitzit. But that doesn't tell us whether women got reward for it, or they just obligated it because of when men wore it. Right? Meaning it's clear that what motivated the obligation was that men sometimes wore the beged. We don't know what, from this sifrei, whether when the women wore it, they got schar or not. We just know that there were begadim that women wore that they were obligated to have tzitzit on for the sake of men. We don't know yet whether what value halachically there was when the women wore it. Okay. Now, in the Gemara, you get a little bit more clues to Rabbi Shimon's position. Rabbi Shimon tells you, how do you know that it is time-bound? So Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara tells you, Ditanya, I'll just go to the key line here, Ritemoto, because it says, and you shall see them, Prat Liksut Laila, which comes to exclude nighttime clothing. Now, there is a three-way machloket in Rishonim, what that even means. Does prat l'ksut laila mean that tzitzit, you're only obligated to wear tzitzit during the daytime, regardless of what clothes you have? And what matters is day versus night. Possibility two is, what matters is what type of clothing is it? Meaning, daytime clothes or pajamas, and daytime clothes are obligated in tzitzit both during the day and at night, and pajamas are exempt day and night. Or possibility three is the Ran, who says both. That in order for something to be chayav in tzitzit, it needs to be both daytime and clothes that are normally worn during the day. But if it's nighttime, you're exempt in all clothes, and if it's pajamas, you're exempt even during the day. And it could be, and I spend a long time on this in Shir, it could be that the question of whether, the question of whether women are exempt from tzitzit hangs on that machloket rishonim. Right? It could be that if you think that it depends on day-night, so that it's time-bound. If you think it depends on the type of clothing, so then it's not time-bound. However, Rabbeinu Tam rejects the analysis that I just said, and Rabbeinu Tam says, no, it depends on clothing, and it's still considered time-bound because the fact that daytime clothing are obligated and not pajamas shows you that the mitzvah is related to time, and Rabbeinu Tam is mechadesh, that mitzvah that says shezeran grama doesn't mean that it's time-dependent, but rather than its obligation has something to do with time. And therefore saying that you're only obligated with day clothes rather than pajamas is sufficient to define it as time-bound. So we get a little bit of clarification here from Rabbi Shimon. I see four people's hands up, so go.
Shalom, Rav Zeran. Can you repeat the three opinions again? Someone came in and I missed them.
Okay. So there are three positions in Rishonim. The Rambam's position, okay, is that tzitzit, you're obligated during the day rather than at night. Right? So if it is daytime, no matter what you're wearing, if it's four-cornered, so you are chayiv in tzitzit. So therefore, there are many Sfardi poskim who rule that, and one of the people in our shir discovered this year, right? There are many Sfardi poskim who rule that if you have a blanket which is four corners, which is almost all blankets, and you're Sfardi, so then you have two choices. You can either put tzitzit on it, or you have to sew up one of the corners in order to round it. Because, according to the Rambam, tzitzit are, you're obligated in tzitzit if it is daytime. And unless you never wake up past sun, past daybreak. So, according to the Rambam's position, presumably you are chayev in tzitzit. The Rush says that it goes by the definition of the beged. So, daytime clothes are always chayev in tzitzit. Pajamas are not, regardless of whether it's day or night. And the Ran says that it's double principled. It needs to be daytime, and it needs to be day clothes. If it's nighttime, you're exempt from all clothing. If it's pajamas during the day, you're also exempt. Now, it could be, so the Gemara says that Rabbi Shimon thinks that tzitzit are time-bound because ksud laila is not chayav. Now, again, it could be, and there are indications in favor of this in certain places in the sugya, that the question of whether women are exempt or not hangs on which of these reads you have. I mean, if you think that tzitzit are obligatory during the day, so it's time-bound. If you think it depends on the clothing, so then it's not time-bound. But as I said, lahalacha, Rabbeinu Tam, accepts the position that tzitzit depend on the type of clothing rather than the time of day, and nevertheless rules that it's a mitzvah to say shezman grama, because he is mechadesh that mitzvah seish zman grama doesn't mean time-bound. It means that its obligation is conceptually linked to something that has to do with time. That's what we have so far in the Gemara. Okay, someone had a question and a chat.
Yes, Rob. So my question is what is east?
What is what? I lost you for a second. Hello? One second.
I mean, you're back. Okay, Rob, my
phone. Yeah, go. What's up, Yaakov?
That's my question.
Yeah, ask it again, yeah?
Yeah, you want to know what it is. Okay, so my question is what is the reading on the Rambam's position in the Gemara? I mean, it says, like, suslila, which doesn't that, by definition, mean
Yes, the reed definitely sound at this stage in the Gemara, it sounds very much like the Rosh's reed rather than the Rambam's. I agree 100%. There are reasons to believe not that way, but if we go down that rabbit hole, we won't get through this sugya, but you're correct, right? This sugya sounds very much, and that's part of Rabbeinu Tam's proof, right? Rabbeinu Tam is motivated from the fact that our Gemara says, Ksud Laila, which sounds simple pshat like the Rush, right? That what's relevant is the type of clothing, and yet, this Gemara argues that women are exempt because it is a mitzvah to say Shezman Grama, which is what leads to Rabbeinu Tam's Chiddush, that even if you conceptualize it like the Rush, since it is somewhat related to time, it is considered mitzvah to say Shezman Grama. But you're right that that is a novel read, but right, what motivates that read essentially is the combination of the literary point that you note in this Gemara with the fact that this is the Gemara that outlines the principle that this is considered time-bound. But you're right. And for the moment, we're going to have to not get too deep into the Rambam's position. I gave it to you here, right? The Rambam, Shechovar HaTzitzit B'yom V'lo B'layla, Shema Ritem Oto B'Shad Ri'iya. But you're right, it is a hard read. Now, if you continue number 8, you'll see... Sorry? Hello? Okay,
yeah,
so...
Sorry.
No problem. Okay, so if you continue in the Gemara, this is a continuation of the Gemara there in Menachot, so you find out that not only was there a theoretical position in the Sifrei that women were obligated, but in fact, Rabbi Yehuda Ramitchelto leParmozadan Shevete. Rabbi Yehuda used to put tzitzit on his wife's clothing. And the Gemara says, what's the reason? Because it's not time bound. So in the Sifrei, we had three possible reasons why women might be obligated. Either a special gzeirah katuv. Two is that it's not time bound, right? A rejection of the principle that it's time bound, or the possibility that the rejection of the entire rule that women are exempt from time bound mitzvot. In the Gemara, there's only one possibility, and the Gemara says that everyone agrees that women are exempt from time bound mitzvot. The only question is whether or not tzitzit is considered time-bound or not. And therefore, the Gemara says that the machlokas in Chazal comes down to this point, and you have Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara Menachot, and then if you look at number 9, Rav Amram Chasida Ramatchelta Lavarmuzadan Shebesa, that Rav Amram Chasida in the Gemara in Sukkah is the person who puts tzitzit on his wife's clothing, but either way, there are positions in Chazal, and as the simple pshat of the Gemara is that the machloket is whether or not it's considered time bound. Now the Ran tries to deflect this. Now this is very hard in the Gemara in Menachot, but at least in the Gemara in Sukkah, the Ran claims that Rav Amram Chasida does not hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Right? In the Gemara in Menachot, it's pretty clear that Rav Yehuda holds that women are actually obligated in tzitzit. However, in the Gemara in Sukkah, the Ran is medayik from the fact that the Gemara says that the person who put tzitzit on his wife's clothing was Rav Amram Chasida, Rav Amram the pious. So the Ran is medayik, Udamrin Natam Verakama de Sukkah, de Mar Amram Chasida, Ramatchel, Davruzad Le Jevete, Mishamid Chasida Ba'alma Huda Avad. He was righteous, he was unique, he did it as a lechumra, right? He did it as a, it was a nice thing to do. But even he held that women were not obligated. And that's how the Ran reads the Gemara in Sukkah. Now, based on what we have had, what would you guess? How would we paskin? Right, based on all the evidence, what would you assume? Women are
Patur,
but are they allowed to be mekayim it?
Why not? Any other?
Good. They should be allowed to. And not only should they be allowed to, but based on the Ron's analysis of the Gemara and Sukkah, if they did it, it's a good thing to do. Right? It's particularly good. And if you read Shulchan Aruch in number 11, right, Nashim Avadim Pturim, Nashim Mitzvah Seishman Grama, you have no indication from Shulchan Aruch that this is different from any other time-bound mitzvah. And you would assume that they're not obligated, but they're allowed to. And if they do, they get reward. And in fact, that's explicit in the Rambam. And the Rambam in 12 tells you, Nashim Avadim Sharatu Lehitatet Betzitzit Mitatvin Below Bracha. Women who put on tzitzit can put it on just without a bracha. Because the Rambam holds in general that when women fulfill time-bound mitzvot, they're allowed to, but they don't say a bracha. V'chein, shar kol ha-mitzvot ha-seisha nashim pturot mehen, any other time-bound positive commandment that women are exempt for, im ratzu la'asot otop lo bracha, im machim v'yadam, they want to do it as long as they don't say a bracha. So then, they're allowed to. And if you're Ashkenazi, so then you know that the Rama follows the position of Rabbeinu Tam that says that not only are women allowed to fulfill mitzvot aseh shezman grama and they get reward for it, but they're even allowed to say a bracha. So if you combine everything we've seen until now, the most likely psak would be that women don't have to put on tzitzit. If they do, they get reward, just like any other mitzvot aseh shezman grama. If you paskin, like the Rambam in general, then they put it on without a bracha. If you paskin like Rabbeinu Tam, so then just like women make a bracha when they blow shofar, they make a bracha when they put on tzitzit, according to everyone, they're allowed to put it on and they get schar if they do. And that would be the most likely conclusion from our sugya. And you could have therefore felt that either women are allowed to put on tzitzit or perhaps, like things like lulav and shofar, we would actively encourage women to participate in the mitzvah if they so choose, and whether or not they need a bracha depends on whether or not you normally think that women can make brachot on mitzvah asei shezman gram. And therefore, there would be no reason to believe that women are in any sense excluded from this mitzvah any more than any other mitzvah asei shezman gram. And that's where we would be where we would stand if we stopped here. However, where it gets complicated is there this Ashkenazi tradition that appears in the Rama, reflecting the position of the Maharil. And the Rama in Arachayim Yud Zayin Beis writes, "Umikom Makom." This is number 13. Im rotzim lehitat leatfa ulevarech alav. Sorry, the Rama here writes. Right, at this point the Rama says you're allowed to, but as we'll see later on, the Rama is going to reject this. The Rama is going to argue that for some reason tzitzit are different, and that's what we have to analyze and figure out why it would be that anyone would think that tzitzit would be different. Okay. So, the first position, which appears in the Targum Yerushalmi and the Targum Yonatan, is the following: Lo yek kli gever al isha, v'lo yibash gever simla isha, ki tovad Adonai alecha kol osi. There's a prohibition in the Torah of cross-dressing, and there is a tradition that appears in Targum Yonatan that says Lo yihye gulayon de tzitzit utfilin. The Targum comments here that what this means is that women can't wear tzitzit, which is a kli gever. So what do you see from this very strange comment in the Targum? Right, this is the first indication that we have.
Man's garment and should not be worn by a woman.
Exactly. Now this is a very Now, to be fair, a lot of the poskim who quote him from the Targum Yonatan, which is not really Yonatan. It's not really Yonatan ben Uziel, the Tana, because Chazal say that Yonatan ben Uziel only wrote a Targum on Navi. It's really a conglomerate of different Targumim over the years, right? Guys who've heard me give shir probably know this, but there are that we have extant one Targum Bavel, right? One Aramaic translation from Bavel, and that is what we know as Targum Onkelos, and three or two and a half Targume Eretz Yisrael. The earliest full Targum Eretz Yisrael is known as Targum Neophiti, or Ktav Yad Romi, which was a full Targum Eretz Yisrael from the time of Chazal, which was found in the Vatican. There's a fragment Targum, which is what you have here, the Targum Yerushalmi. And then there's what's known in academic literature as Pseudo-Jonathan, or what you find in some Mikra Gedolot as Targum Yonatan, which is some conglomeration of some early Eretz Yisrael Targum plus some medieval material. We know that certain parts of Targum Yonatan are as late as the medieval period. We know that because in the Psukim about Esav marrying Yishmael's daughter, they are named Fatima and Fatima and something, which is Muhammad's wife and daughter. So obviously that is a later midrashic comment from a post-Muslim period. But at any rate, this position in the Targum is very problematic. Why is it problematic? And then I'll take questions. First, tell me why it's problematic, and then I'll take questions. But why is it problematic?
Because if it's inherently a man's garment, then how can you ever have a habamina in these early sources of Torah that a woman could wear it? Or
very good, right? Very simple, right? Is that we have one day in Chazal that women are allowed to wear it. We have an explicit day on the Sifrei that women are exempt, and sometimes you have to put tzitzit on their beged. And the simple pshat in the Rambam, the Ran, following the general rule in Chazal, is that women are allowed to put it on. So it would be very odd. Now, obviously, the Targum Yerushalmi predates the Rambam and the Ran, but it doesn't predate the Sifrei, presumably. And you know that Yehuda's position in the Sifrei is that women... there are certain begadim that women wear that even if you think they're exempt from the mitzvah tzitzit, they have to wear it. And even conceptually, it would be very hard to explain why tzitzit would exclude women fundamentally. Besides, it's very strange today that tzitzit are the clothes of men, right? They're not even really clothing, right? They're addendum to our clothes, which you put on l'shem mitzvah. Which is very weird to call that kli gever. Okay, I see four people's hands up, so go.
I just want to add on that it's also a problem with, I don't remember which rug this was, but the one that consists on the garments that everyone in the family wore.
Right, no, exactly, that's the point, right, is that you have Deod and Chazal that either think that women are obligated and put tzitzit on his wife's beged, or, as the Ran understands it, Rav Avram Chasida, who put it on his wife's clothing even though he was exempt. Which means that you have several Deod and Chazal that either say women wore it because they were obligated to, or women wore it even though they weren't obligated to. So, it's hard to say, even if the Targum Yerushalmi actually holds it, it would be very hard for us to say that we paskin this way, because it goes against the positions we know in Chazal, as well as the major Rishonim commenting on the positions that we have in Chazal. So it's very hard to assume, and that was why I spent so much time with Sifrei, pointing out that even Rabbi Yehuda, the Sifrei, who thinks women are exempt, thinks that there are times you have to put tzitzit on women's begadim, and in the Gemara you have positions who say that at least it's a mitzvah. So it's very hard to say that at least the mainstream position in Chazal is that women would be forbidden in a fundamental sense from wearing tzitzit. Maybe they're exempt. That is how we paskin. But fundamentally excluded because of kli gever, that is very, very problematic to read in Chazal. And the evidence, right, the brunt of the sugya really pushes against that. Okay. Other comments on that point. But I think you're 100% right. It's a very hard read, La Halacha, because it goes against the lion's share of the members of Chazal, both those who think that women are obligated in tzitzit, and even those who think that women are not obligated in tzitzit, who explicitly say that sometimes either you're allowed to or you have to put tzitzit on their clothing. All of those militate against this fundamental exclusion of women's ability to wear tzitzit. Again, they might not be obligated, but to say that they're fundamentally excluded is extremely, extremely problematic in the main sources in Chazal and Rishonim. Other questions? Just, yeah.
Earlier point?
Yes.
About the nighttime exception. Would that nighttime exception still apply today since we have so much light and electricity so we can always see what people are wearing?
Good. So, probably, it's a fundamental exception. However, there is a tshuva of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in the Har Tzvi, who notes that one can be medayik from a position Sefer HaPardes L'Rashi, that maybe it's not about day or night; it's about light and dark, and therefore the Har Tzvi and Rav Menashe Klein and the Shu'at Mishnah Halacha entertain the possibility. And yes, I was trying to get away from that position, but you are correct. Technically, there are not three positions in Rishonim. Technically, there are four positions in Rishonim. The fourth position is the Sefer HaPardes L'Rashi, who seems to say that, yes, if you have lights on at night, then you would in fact be chayv in tzitzit, because it is a question of whether you can physically see or not. It is a very wild shita to say that, but yes, it is true that the Sefer HaPardes L'Rashi does seem to say that, and the Har Tzvi and the Mishnah Halacha both entertain that as a viable conceptual possibility. So, yes, technically there are four positions.
Also on that point, I guess this would be another point where the Sefer HaPardes L'Rashi might have a different view than other people, but could you make the argument that Ori Tevoto means that you aren't allowed to duck in your tzitzos?
Yes. Yes. You can, and that is a sheer...
Are there two opinions on that? Whether it goes tucked in or tucked out?
Yes.
Or...
Yes, 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 and yes. Right? The people who think... Baruch Shekivanta, yes. The positions who think you should dock have your tzitzit out, either just the strings or even the entire beged, are based on a literal read of the words Uri Temoto, and those who think that you don't need or shouldn't have your tzitzit out assume that no, Uri Temoto is only about what it says in Chazal, namely the time, but does not weigh in on the way in which you should actually wear it. 100%, that is part of the machloket. I spent a day on this in Shir as well, but yes, that is exactly what this machloket hangs on. Yes. By the way, anybody who has any of the questions where I said we dealt with this in Shir, if you want afterwards, just email me and I'll send you the Makarot on that topic. Alternatively, we can do a Shir later in the summer and go over those topics, but at the very least, I can send you the sources or the link to the Shir on YU Torah where we discussed it in Shir during the year. So just anyone who wants to follow up on sources, feel free to email me and I'll send them along. Okay.
What would you get from the Targum Yonis on the women are fundamentally exempt? Could it just be in his time, the woman never wore it, and that's why it's begged it should be separate? Yes, sir.
Ah, good. So theoretically, now it's very hard because he's reading it into the Pasuk, right? Right? Meaning he's reading this as his interpretation of the Pasuk. So it sounds fundamental. It's possible that he's making a contextual comment, because the Targum Yerushalmi is not a word-for-word translation. It's, right, it's a drasha, right? It's like a shul drasha, right? If you know how Targum functioned in Eretz Yisrael as opposed to Babel, it sounds not that way because it's how he reads the Pasuk, right? But it's not impossible that he's making a time-sensitive comment. You're right, Ellie, but it's not... I would say the less likely of the reads, considering he thinks that this is the interpretation of the words in the Pasuk. Again, it could be that that's not what he means, but again, it's a Targum on the Pasuk. Right, it's a translation, or at least a paraphrase. Say it again?
Even if
forget about his specific target, what if that rule applied to any specific type of mega that men like wear and then women don't wear? I mean, the towel's content that all of us wear, I've never seen one wear ever, even though they may be able to purchase on a different type of mega, they would be able to wear that.
Maybe, right? Unless you think what he means is that the strings, right, the tzitzit, not the beged, the tzitzit, right? Because remember, tzitzit fundamentally go on any beged that you wear, which is four cornered. So it sounds like it's the tzitzit rather than the beged that tzitzit is on. You're right, you could be doche, but I think it's the less likely read. The Targum Rishalmi is problematic, but I do think the most likely read within the Targum is that the tzitzit themselves are beged ish. I think. Okay. Now, the Levush accepts some version of this Targum lehalacha. And if you look at 16, he writes, Keva delochiva atar simlat ish, heich yitchayeva isha atzma v'davar sheish bo nidnud avera dahainu simlat dever. Right? He said, since women are exempt, so how can a woman obligate herself in something that has a bit of an avera? Right? Namely, that it is men's clothing, right? So he doesn't come out and say that it's, you know, actually beged-ish. He just sort of says it's like enough, close enough to beged-ish, such that even if women generally are allowed to wear, allowed to fulfill mitzvot that they're not obligated in, this one they would not be allowed to because it's sort of usser. In the Ben Ish Chai, in Kabbalah, he thinks that it's even more fundamental. And he writes in 17, right, we're concerned because when women can't wear men's clothing. And Alpi Kabbalah, they are excluded from this. Now, the Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg takes the middle position that we suggested before, which I said I think is hard. You know, that Ellie suggested. I think it's a hard read in the Targum Yerushalmi, but Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg basically suggests what Ellie says, which is to say that, look, maybe the strings might be usher because of Kli Gever. Amnam ein zeh isur barur, but that's not clear. Aval talit, but wearing the talis that a man actually wears, so that he thinks pashut she'asur. That he thinks is definitely forbidden. Correct. I don't think he's getting it from the Targum. He's just saying this as a general statement. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says the same thing in 19. That Rav Moshe says, "Gamal tzitzit shayach liisha shetirtzal lilbosh beged shehi b'tzura acheret v'gdei anashim." It's conceptually possible for a woman to volunteer to wear tzitzit as long as it's in a different beged than when men wear. Avol yeb arba kanfot latilbo tzitzit kai mitzvazu. Right? She should wear a shawl, right? A woman's shawl with tzitzit if she's going to wear it and not a talis. Now. the Bach, makes general comments in 20 about Beged Isha and Beged Ish, and notes that it's only usher if you wear it in order to mimic what a man wears, right? It's only B'isha Lovesha Bigde Ish Lehidamot Le'ish. But if they wear it for some other reason, like it's cold, and they put on, you know, their husband's coat because it's cold, right, that's fine, right? You've probably seen this, right? You know, someone, I'm sure you've seen this with your parents or something at some point, right? That your mother is cold and she forgot to bring her coat, so she like puts on your father's suit jacket or something like that, right? The Bach says that's fine. Yes, it's a man's clothing, but she's clearly putting it on because she forgot her coat and she's chilly, right? It's not to look like a man. She doesn't look like a man by putting it on. And he says, makes a second argument that maybe the Isser is only when they're trying to imitate, but not things that are for, right, only things that are meant for beautification and decoration, but are not functional. The Sridei Eish has another fundamental rejection, which is that it can't be beged-ish if the reason you're wearing it is not to imitate a man, but to fulfill a mitzvah. Right? The fact that you're doing it l'shem mitzvah makes it that it can't be Begadish. So he writes, Shemechaven Shemitkavenet L'Shem Mitzvah Ein Kan Eser Lo Yilbash. Since she's doing it for a mitzvah, it can't be a problem of Lo Yilbash, and therefore that can't be the reason. Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg, again, notes that it could be argued that if a woman wears a talis, right, like a man's talis, so for many women that are doing that, they might be doing it to mimic men, so that might really be Begadish. But that's not a din in tzitzis. It's a din in them wearing the talis that men normally wear. But that would theoretically leave the possibility open for them wearing a woman's beged with tzitzit. And Rav Henkin, in 23 as well, argues that if women are wearing it underneath their clothing so that no one even sees it, right, it's very hard to say that that is right Begadish, right? No one even sees it. But we'll come back to that in a minute. Okay. That is possibility one. That the reason women might be fundamentally excluded is because of this idea that it's a Begadish. But as we said, this is very problematic in Chazal, because in Chazal, there were positions who felt that women were allowed, either obligated to wear tzitzis, or in certain circumstances, allowed to wear tzitzis, or had to wear tzitzis, even though they were exempt. And the majority of Rishonim felt that women were allowed to wear tzitzis, and get schar for it, with a question of whether they were allowed to make a bracha. That compounded with the fact that they're doing it l'shem mitzvah, as the Sri Deish says, and the fact that they're doing it for functional reasons, rather than beautification reasons, which for the Bach removes it from Begadish, seems to push against us poskening that it's actually Begadish. The talis, per se, might be Begadish, maybe, if women are doing it to mimic men. But tzitzis, as a category, it would seem problematic to argue that women can't wear it for fundamental reasons of Begadish. Okay, the main reason that is quoted in Halacha, though, is not this, but is a reason that I know will make Yaakov angry, and that is the concern of yuhara, of spiritual presumptuousness. So here you have the Abu Draham, who says that in general, if anybody does a mitzvah which they're not obligated for, so that is problematic because it looks haughty. Now the Ravya says that any mitzvah that women normally do is not yuhara. So the fact that most women come to shul to hear the shofar and do lulav, that is not going to be yuhara, even though they're exempt. But if it's a mitzvah that women don't normally do, so for a particular woman to take it on, it might be a problem of yuhara. Right, that is the position of the Ravya. But the notion that it's yuhara really comes to the fore in the following comment of the Maharil. And the Maharil writes, so in one piece, the Maharil writes that he testifies to the fact that there was a woman, a righteous woman in his town, Harabanit Bruna, who actually put on tzitzit, and he didn't like it. He said they let her do it, but because mutav you shogigin malu mezidin, it's better that she violated unintentionally than intentionally, implying that it was really usser. And he explains in 28 as following. He says, "Od nira li the ein mitzvah tzitzit kishar mitzvah davichal v'raguf." He says, "Here's why I think women shouldn't wear tzitzit. Reason one, it's not obligatory." Aval tzitzit avagav the kaimel and chovet gabru ani nili l'misha yesh lo beged bar arba kamfot aval ein luchuiv liknot bar arba elo b'mitzvah la'achnas asmol kal chiyuv. Right, it's not obligatory. It's only obligatory if you have a four-cornered garment, and at best you could say it's good to put yourself in a situation where you're chayiv, but it's not obligatory. But he says since it's only a mitzvah kiyumit, this is different. He says ani mitz mile gavre aval nashi malahem lekach gavim d'sof sof la'ad ben echiyuv ninu. He says, reason one why women shouldn't wear it is that it's not obligatory even for men. So it's one thing for a woman to take on an obligation which is obligatory for men and not for her, and to say, I'll keep it. But to take a mitzvah which isn't obligatory even for men and do it, that he thinks is problematic. And he says, and if they do it, nirat eno melamatmien v'yuarach hashvinan lehu mikri et yotov. And if they do it, it is considered spiritual presumptuousness. And as I said, this becomes the dominant reason that poskim reject women wearing tzitzis, because the Rambam accepts it in 29. He quotes the Maharil, and he says, technically, technically they should be allowed to wear it. Like any other time-bound mitzvah. Ach, merzik yuara, but it's spiritual presumptuousness, it's haughty. Lachain en lahen lubosh tzitzit, and therefore they shouldn't wear it. Hov enoch chovet agavra. Now he combines all the reasons of the Maharil, right? And he seems to say that the reason it's haughty is because it's not obligatory. Right, meaning it's such a mitzvah which even men aren't obligated, so for women to take that mitzvah on is haughty, and therefore he says that women should not wear tzitzit. Based on this, the Aruch HaShulchan says that they shouldn't wear it, and even if they're going to wear it, they definitely shouldn't make a bracha. Now, there's a problem here.
Can I just ask a question on this?
Yes, go.
Seemingly, this is implying that, a woman could, because it uses a lot of language that it just looks like. So, what if a woman wears CC in private?
Ah, very good. So, let's talk about the conceptual issues, and then let's talk about the halachic issues, okay? First of all, there's a problem with this notion, which is, it's not clear why tzitzis, more than any other mitzvah, should be a problem of yuara. Right? We let women fulfill mitzvah. Now you could say, like the Ramah does, which is combine the two reasons in the Maharil and saying, no. It's haughty because women, even men aren't obligated. So it's weird for a woman to want to take on a mitzvah, which is, by its very definition, is not obligatory. Okay, there's a textual problem, which is that according to the Sifrei, Rabbi Yehuda, as in the Tana, thought that there were clothes that were women's clothes that you were obligated to put tzitzit on, which means he didn't have a yuara problem. And the Ran thought that Rav Amram Chasida in the Gemara thought that it was a righteous thing to do to have women wear tzitzit, which means that we have textual evidence that this is not problematic. Furthermore, we have a few problems here. One is that, and Yaakov knows this, that there are different conceptual ways of talking about yuara. One is to say that yuara is problematic because it's like showing off. If it's showing off, so then it would only be problematic if women did it in a way that other people saw, but not if they did it in private. The second issue is that yuara seems to be time dependent, meaning if one woman does it and no one else does it, so that would be, you're trying to stand out. But potentially, if there would be a whole group of women who would want to do it, that wouldn't be yuara because then it would become the norm. Right, so there are several reasons to push back on either assuming that it's yuara, or alternatively, you could open up the possibility of women wearing it either in private, because then it isn't showing off, if you think yuara means showing off, rather than privately feeling better than others. But even that could be negated if it became the norm for women to wear tzitzit, which again would negate the problem. Okay, three people raising their hands. Go.
Like we said before about the clothes, I was thinking maybe the clothes is it didn't start out as necessarily being a men's garment. Maybe it even started out that for women it was plateau. Women they generally didn't wear it for whatever reason, because they were plateau with it. It became more popular for men to wear it on their garments, and because it became like a thing for men to wear, that became like the norm of clothing. That's why it became into a thing. That woman can't wear it because it became medical.
Right, so that's like a right, similar to what Zalman Nechemia said, which is maybe to say, look, it's not fundamentally begadish, but like, you know, societally it's become begadish, right? You could definitely make that argument. Like I said, that's a bit problematic because right, it gets circular, right? Meaning, right, it's not, if you don't take the fundamental view that it is begadish, which is problematic, it's hard to say that wearing tzitzit is begadish if you're doing l'shem mitzvah. Wearing a man's talis, I understand, but wearing tzitzit on a woman's clothing, it's a little bit hard, right? It's not glot.
I guess maybe shouldn't do tzitzit.
Yeah, exactly, right? Meaning, but it's a mitzvah, just like shofar, where you're allowed to do it. That's why the Maharil, the Rama understands the Maharil is making a two-pronged argument, which is, rather than two separate arguments, right, two points that reinforce each other, which is, since this is not obligatory even for men, right, that's what makes it problematic for women, because they're taking on a mitzvah which isn't even obligated for anybody. Again, it's a bit shaky. Okay, someone else had their hand up.
Even if your is because of showing up, doesn't necessarily mean the halakha was there, or whatever they're calling your was defined as only when it is in the scenario where showing up is like Mark's eye can be in private also.
Correct, and that's what I said. I said URA can be understood in two ways, right? So let's articulate this more clearly. One way of understanding URA is showing off. If it's showing off, so then that should only be a problem in public. But the other way of understanding URA is no. It's being presumptuous, right? It's doing something that is self-righteous, right? And that, meaning it's not about what you show others, it's the way you view yourself. If that's the case, it might even be problematic in private. But again, that's, right, now we're splitting that within URA, you have to ask, what does URA mean? Right? Is URA showing off to others or showing off to yourself? And again, even that might be negated in a world where it becomes normal for women to wear it. So then, right, a woman's not putting herself on a personal pedestal, right? So even if you take the more formalistic view, which is more machmir in this case, it might be that it was true at certain times in history. That doesn't mean it will always be true. What? Okay, take it. But you're right. So what we've opened up here, though, is room to be makel. Now, I could explain why you should be machmir, right? I could say what Ellie said and say, URA is not showing off. URA is doing anything that puts you on a pedestal, right? And therefore, it'd be also even private. But it's not clear that that's what this means, right? So the avenues of kula here are to say, first of all, it's not clear we paskin like the Rama. Even if we paskin like the Rama, maybe URA means showing off. In which case, it's only a problem in public. And even if you think about religious presumptuousness, that would be a problem even in private. It could be that it depends why a woman's doing it. Right? If multiple women start doing it, might not be a problem because it becomes the norm. And if a woman herself is known to be a tzaddiket, who always takes on all mitzvot aseh as man grama, which we don't think is problematic, right? So then, it might not be out of sync with her normal spiritual commitments, to take on tzitzis, because she always takes on mitzvah she's not obligated in. So then again, it might not be a problem of URA, because URA seems to be a problem when someone takes on a mitzvah which is out of sync with their normal religious commitments. But if a woman normally takes on extra mitzvah, you could argue that it would be permitted. Yaakov, I saw you were raising your hand.
Yeah, what are the Gemaras that discuss URA?
So the Gemara discusses URA in several places. They're very complicated, right? In the Gemara, it does seem to be like it's not just showing off. It does seem to be like URA is problematic if you assert a place for yourself in society that you don't normally hold. Right, so like the classic cases of URA, or is if someone is you know, mourns for Yerushalayim in the way that a Talmud Chacham does, but is not necessarily a Talmud Chacham. Right, there the Gemara raises the possibility of URA, and there the problem seems to be not just an act, but it seems to be that you're treating yourself as a Talmud Chacham, right? And giving yourself a status or presenting yourself as having a status that's not your own. But again, it's not clear whether the problem there is simply relegating yourself to that category or it's presenting yourself to the world as being part of that category, right? It's not 100% clear in that sugya what exactly the problem is, which is why there is this ambiguity in Psak as to whether Yuara should be understood as a problem of arrogance or simply a problem of you know, taking on a status that, that you don't deserve. And again, right, you know, this is the problem with this, with sort of doing a survey here, is that each topic here deserves its own treatment, but at least outlining the general directions will show us what, you know, what directions we can take here in Psak. Okay, we've been going almost an hour and a half, so let me try to wrap it up. I'll stay on for as long as people want to ask questions, but let me at least try to wrap it up. Okay, so first of all, look at the Maharil. The Maharil, the same person who said it was Usur, notes that in a different context, in the context of wearing two pairs of tefillin, that the only people who should wear it, right, two pairs of tefillin, are someone who's muchzak mufursim b'chassidut, someone who's known as being especially righteous. Now that already tells you that it could be that yuara is only a problem if this is the only mitzvah that a woman would want to take on that she's not obligated in. Because then it's out of sync with her normal religious chumrah. But as the Maharil already opens up the possibility to, if a woman was known in general to go out of her way to fulfill extra mitzvot, so it might not be presumptuous because it's actually completely in line with her general religious outlook on life and custom. I mean, in fact, Rav Avigdor HaTzarfati, who's one of the Baalei HaTosfot, note that Nagu Miktat Nashim Tzidkaniyot, there were some particularly righteous women who had the Minag L'Tatei Petzitzit, right? So there were clearly cases in the Rishonim that of women who wore tzitzit. Mori Virabi Rav Lichtenstein, in a comment in one of his articles, The Human and Social Factor in Halacha, notes that Yuara, by its definition, is societally defined, and therefore, he says, it's conceivable that at some point, fully responsible and fully committed Gedolim will re-examine the Maharil Mullen's Maharil's position regarding women's rights. It's it, right? He said it's possible, conceptually, that there will come a point at which Poskim will look around and say, look, it is not, it's not a problem.
Well, isn't his point that they're like they need to be like very righteous women?
Whose point?
Not necessarily.
Whose point?
The person that Rav Lichtenstein is quoting, the Maharil.
No. The Maharil was the one who said that it's also because of Yuara. Remember, that was the original person who said it, the Maharil, right? But Rav Lichtenstein is saying that even within the Maharil,
right there.
What?
The Maharil, right there. And he says, only whose piety is established.
No, that's a different context, right? Meaning, the Maharil, right, let's try this again. Right, the Maharil is the one who say that women shouldn't wear it because of Yuara. But the Maharil, in a different context, talking about wearing two pairs of tefillin, argues that something is Yuara only if someone isn't known as a particular tzaddik. So if you combine those, what Rav Lichtenstein is arguing is saying, even the Maharil, who thinks that women wearing tzitzis is yuara, that might only be true at certain times in history. But it could be that there'll come a point where, you know, either there'll be a particular woman or a group of women who wear tzitzis and it's completely in line with their general religious practice and therefore wouldn't be yuara. Or even if the Maharil wouldn't think that, it's a plausible halachic argument.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that it seems to be from his lashon. I think is it seems to be that it's not yuara if it's a righteous woman that's known for a righteous.
No. Again, no. The Maharil is not talking about women in tzitzis. The Maharil by women in tzitzis says black on white that it is yuara. The Maharil who says that yuara depends on your normal tzitzis is talking about men wearing two pairs of tefillin. He's talking about the category of URI. He's not talking about women in tzitzis. Right? There is no place where the Maharil says that women can wear tzitzis if they're righteous. Rabbi Avigdor Tzarfati, who's one of the Balei HaTosfot, says that. Right? Says that there were women who wore it. But the Maharil at no place explicitly says this. It could be the Maharil would be open to such a possibility. And even if the Maharil isn't, it could be that later poskim will conceptually be open to it, even if the Maharil himself wouldn't be. Now, the Shvud Yaakov, I'm going to skip for a second the Yom Shel Shlomo, but the Shvud Yaakov takes the position that URA is more about showing off, in general, not about women and sisters, but in general he takes the position that URA is more of a problem in public because it's about showing off rather than taking on something that's not in line with your normal religious practice. And therefore he says, Kol she'asa kein b'tzinah, if you do it in private, nikar machshavto mitoch ma'asav she'eino osa kein mishum URA. If you do it in private and you think that URA is about showing off, so then in private it's not a problem. So that would be another avenue of heter. Because if you think URA is about showing off, so then if you, a woman did it in private, it wouldn't be usur. Now, lehalacha, there are actually several major poskim who were willing to entertain the possibility that women could wear, could theoretically wear tzitzis. So let me just show you a few. So here, you know, let's start with Moshe Feinstein, because Moshe Feinstein is not, you know, considered a modern posek particularly, right? But he says, Ibra d'ikar shut l'chol isha l'kayim af mitzvah sh'lechiaftan ha-torah v'yesh la mitzvah s'char al-kim mitzvot elu. A woman is allowed to fulfill a mitzvah that she wants to, that she's not obligated in, etc. And he says, Gamal tzitzit shayach l'isha sh'tir t'livot beget sh'yeh b'tzura acher b'gdei anashim aval yeh b'ar b'kanva adil b'tzitzit l'kayim mitzvah zo. Ramosha says, and therefore a woman who wants to wear tzitzis, as long as it's not on a man's clothing, it's not a man's talis, but a woman who wants to put tzitzis on her own beged, a woman's clothing, so that could be fine. Avol hu pashut, but he says, that's obvious, hu rakshach b'chashka nafshal l'kayim mitzvah afkshal nitzdava. That's only if she's doing it because she really wants to be mekayim mitzvot. And therefore Ramosha takes the position that assuming that the woman is doing it for sincere reasons and she's putting it on a woman's clothing, so it is definitely a halachic possibility. Panini Halacha Rav Malamud says that as long as a woman does it in private, which we've already seen the Shvud Yaakov, that if you think URA is about showing off, so doing it in private would be fine. And that's how the Panini Halacha paskins. He says, therefore, in my opinion, a woman who wants to wrap herself in tzitzis for God's sake may do so in private. There is no concern for arrogance and is not an expression of resentment against Halacha and the tradition. If many women do so for God's sake and in private, then over time, even if they wear tzitzit in a non-private setting, it will not be considered arrogance or an offense against the traditions of the Torah. Nevertheless, in my opinion, even today one should not object to a woman whose intentions are for God's sake and who wraps herself publicly in tzitzit, for she has authorities upon whom to rely. However, one should object to women who are not meticulous about many mitzvot, but who specifically wear a tallit publicly in order to express their opposition to halachic tradition. Right? So the Panini Halacha takes a middle position here, and he says, look, in private, he thinks it's definitely fine, because he thinks URA is more about showing off. He thinks if women start wearing it regularly, so then even in public it'll be fine because it'll become normal, like women blowing the shofar. He doesn't like women wearing tzitzis in public now, but he says theoretically if they do, they have poskim to rely on, and therefore it's not usur. The only thing he opposes are women who wear tzitzis, not l'shem shamayim, but to make a statement. Then he opposes it. But otherwise, he is open to it. And as we saw above, Rav Henkin and Rav Lichtenstein were both open to the possibility that it should be mutter for women to wear tzitzit. And Rav Henkin specifically says that if women do it in private, it is potentially legitimate. Malka Petrikovsky, has written a halacha book as well, and she writes that in general she opposes when poskim assume that they know what women have in their minds, and she doesn't like that, right? Meaning it's not fair for men to say women can't wear it because they're doing it for the wrong reasons, and assumes that women have to know themselves as to why they're choosing to do a mitzvah, which is a broader methodological point that I think has a lot of merit. And even Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, who we saw, was even concerned that it might be mitzvah, that it might be Beged Ish. Even he is willing to say that im achar kol zeh chashka nashka dafka mitzvah tzitzit, if you have a woman who for some reason particularly falls in love with the mitzvah of tzitzit, ulai yesh makom shetelechna b'tzitzit talit katan tachat b'gdehen, maybe there is room for women to wear a talis katan that's hidden, that other people don't see it, so it's not showing off. But he does say, well, yesh lezeh makom rach achar shetaharderna b'chom ha'shen etchayvu, but he says really they first have to make sure to keep the mitzvah that they're obligated in, gam jen akein yesh lazadzot b'tzina, and then even so they should do it privately. Okay. Let me summarize what we've seen, because that took a lot longer than I wanted, but that's fine. I don't mind learning Torah for longer. So let's summarize what we've seen, okay? Very quickly. So first of all, there's a fundamental machlokes in Chazal already, whether mitzvah, women are chayav and tzitzis. In the Sifrei, there were three possibilities. Either they argue about whether or not it's time-bound. Two, they argue about whether women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. Or three, there might be gzirat katuv that says that women are particularly obligated in tzitzit. All three possibilities are open in the Sifrei. In the Gemara, it's clear that the machloket is it or is it not time-bound. We noted that conceptually, the question of whether it's time-bound may or may not depend on the question of whether the mitzvah of tzitzit is night versus night clothing an exemption. But, as we noted, Rabbeinu Tam says that's not necessarily the case. At any rate, halacha we paskin that women are exempt. That is not in question. However, according to the Ran, Rav Amram Chasida and the Gemara felt that women were exempt and were allowed to put it on, which tells you that already in the Gemara, according to the Ran, it was an option. And they would get schar for it, and that's how the Rambam paskins. Machloket we shown him whether allowed to say a mitzvah, a bracha, just like any other mitzvah to say Shimon Grama. And in the Sifrei, it's even more, because the Sifrei quotes Rabbi Huda's position that women are exempt from mitzvah, from tzitzis, but nevertheless there are certain begadim that they're obligated to wear tzitzis on because men might wear them. Which, again, points to the notion that women are not removed from the mitzvah. They're not usher in the mitzvah. Why might you think that they're usher and not just not obligated? So one is Beged Isha, Beged Ish rather. And that's what we saw in the Targum. Now this is problematic, first of all, because it goes against all the positions we just noted in Chazal, right, that we know of, Rav Chasida, Rav Yehuda, etc. It goes against the Rambam, it goes against the Ran, so it's very hard to paskin that way. Plus, it's hard to say that wearing tzitzis is Beged Ish, because you're doing L'shem Mitzvah, which is what the Sridi Eish says. You're not doing it to imitate a man, you're doing L'shem Mitzvah. And the Bach says, furthermore, anytime you're doing something for any functional reason and not to imitate a man, it's not Beged Ish. And therefore, it's very hard to say that it's Beged Ish. It might be that wearing a man's talis is Beged Ish, but wearing tzitzis on a woman's beged is very problematic to say that that's Beged Ish, and most of the postim seem to reject that position. Then there's the question of Yora. Now that's a bit weird for several reasons. One is, in general, we allow women to perform mitzvot that they're not obligated in. To solve that problem, the Ramah combines both David and the Maharil and says that it's only mitzvah that even men aren't obligated in. If women do it, so then it's a problem of Yora, right? That's the way the Ramah understands it. However, you could still negate that in several ways. One is to understand Yora as showing off. If that's the case, it would be obviated by doing it in private, which is the position of Moshe Feinstein. It's the position, it seems to be, of the Panini Halacha, of Rav Henkin, and others. The second point is that Yuara might be not showing off, but taking a status upon yourself that is not in sync with your normal spiritual personality. Now, that could be negated by one of two ways. Either it becoming normal for women to wear tzitzis, or if a woman in general is particularly righteous and always goes out of her way to fulfill mitzvah that she's not obligated in, so then it would be completely in line with her normal spiritual practice to wear tzitzis. On that basis, Rav Lichtenstein argues that it could be that times will change. The Panini Halacha argues that if a woman wants to wear it in private and she normally fulfills mitzvot, so then it should be mutter. And if it became the norm, then women could even wear it publicly. Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg are both willing to entertain the fact that if a woman particularly likes the mitzvah tzitzis and wears it in private, she could do it. Rav Zalman Nechemia wants to make sure that this isn't the only mitzvah that she's keeping, but he's open to saying that she can wear it in private. Rav Malama just says she shouldn't wear it as a statement, because that already is problematic. But assuming she's wearing it because the mitzvah tzitzis resonates with her, so then it should be mutter. And again, if she does it in private, and she's the type of woman who normally takes on extra mitzvot, so you solve both interpretations of Yuara. Both the notion of showing off, because she's doing it in private, and the notion that it's religious presumptuousness, because it's actually in line with her normal religious practice. And therefore, right, lahalacha, you'll have some people who will say, look, the Ramah says it's asur, it's Yuara, you're not obligated, it's asur. But as we've seen, there are major poskim who either will follow the Sephardi tradition, who never had this Chumra of the Ramah, right, like the Rambam, right? There are Kabbalists who will say, like the Ben Ish Chai, it's Beged Ish. But as we said, that's very problematic. And even among Ashkenazi poskim, so you could just say, look, the Ramah says it's Beged Ish. It's Yuara, and that's all there is to it. But as we saw, there are major Ashkenazi poskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Pnei Halacha, Rav Lichtenstein, Pnei Banim, etc., are willing to say that, again, if you think it's about showing off, so just do it in private. And even if it's about religious presumptuousness, so if a woman generally does mitzvah she's not obligated in, so it's not a problem, or even if she happens to particularly resonate with this mitzvah and she's doing it for the right reasons, then it might not be a problem of religious presumptuousness. So that's because of all this flexibility, you see that even major Ashkenazi poskim are willing to say that it is permitted. So that is the basics of this sugya from the basic conceptual issues. Now again, as I noted, to fully understand the sugya, you need to understand the nature of mitzvah sheishas man grama. You need to go through the 3/4 positions in the nature of the mitzvah of tzitzis, right? Day versus night, night clothing versus day clothing, both, or maybe light versus dark. You need to understand the full sugya of Yuara, of which we've only touched on. You need to understand the full sugya of Beged Ish, which we've only touched on. But at least we've touched on the major points in each of the factors in the sugya to understand each of the poskim and the directions that emerge from the conceptual directions through the halachal maisa directions. That was an hour and 40. So really, I don't feel insulted if anyone needs to leave or needed to leave half an hour ago. But I'll stay on for questions for as long as people want. Yaakov, I hope you're happy that we covered the topic that you wanted.
Thank you.
Shkoyach, guys. That was a long shir, but okay.
Thank you so much.
And good, and you know, thank you for the questions and pushing me. And it's good to see you guys. See you guys later. Daniel, you're happy. We didn't cover it during the year, but we covered it, okay? It was a bit quick, but we covered it. Okay?
It was good. I'll go buy my mom a pair of tzitzis now.
Oh, thank you. And then she'll say it's my fault. Okay, great. Now someone will lynch me for it. Okay. Yeah, what can you do? Shkoyach, guys.